Hey everyone, welcome. Merry Christmas. This is our second to last, I believe, holiday episode, and we have a cartoon one coming up at the end for those Myopia Morning fans, all of the two of you. Anyway, I hope you enjoy Gremlins. This is a movie that I came to relatively late and had seen bits of, and of course, had he not recognized Gizmo. But for the most part, it was a movie that I had just not, you know, been excited to see. And boy, was I wrong. This is a fun, silly, lighthearted horror comedy, I guess. And it's perfectly enjoyable. So please, thanks for tuning in, and thanks for making 2017 an excellent year to be a podcast.
We need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the roundtable in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant Glickery? Redonkulous? let's not go with Shrek. That you know. The first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of, you know.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Okay. Stay on topic.
Stay on topic. Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic.
Red leader, I'm sorry. I can't see it. It's up to you, Red 5.
God.
Where's the promo,
so,
Luke?
Promo. The Roundtable, brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at revolutionsf.com and iTunes.
Welcome to Baby Fair Childhood. This week we talk 1984. I didn't even look.
84.
Gremlins. Thank you. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor of Dude Letter. I don't even know. We don't write things anymore for Dude Letter. Host, producer.
I do.
Executive producer on Dude Letter. Yeah. And riffer on Cineprov. And on panel we have
Matthew W. Quinn, author of the teen horror novel The Thing in the Woods, and I was not allowed to see the second Gremlins movie when it came out.
Hmm. But you were allowed to see the first?
I was probably 3 months old for the first one.
Jeremy?
Hello, this is Daniel, and I will get you wet after midnight.
Oh, Jesus Christ. There you go. That's the proper response. I was looking for it.
And scene.
Yeah, and I am Thomas Herman of the Brothers Herman, host of the Geekly Oddcast, and also contributor here on Myopia Defend Your Childhood.
You're all just jealous. That's what you are. You're all just jealous.
We're 140 some odd episodes in, and that just happened. Anyway, this is kind of a Christmassy classic. I don't know. I hate Christmas movies.
It's a Christmas classic in the sense that it takes place during Christmas.
That's the great thing about Die Hard. It's not really a Christmas movie, but for me, it's a movie I will watch every Christmas.
I think people are just tired of traditional Christmas movies because they get replayed every single year.
Lethal Weapon is also one of my favorite Christmas movies because it takes place during Christmas but has nothing to do with Christmas.
What
do
you think? Shane Black. Of course it takes place during Christmas.
What do you think of Edward Scissorhands, where only the third act takes place during Christmas but they still consider it a Christmas movie?
I will watch Honor Majesty's Secret Surface because it kind of takes place during Christmas for 10 minutes. Like, it's a palate cleanser. I have to watch Tim Allen pretend like he's not fat like one more time. Like, and that's a charming movie, and I watch it a bunch, but
it is not a charming
movie. It is a very charming movie.
What, the Santa Claus?
Yes.
No, all it has is charm. There's nothing else
there's
to
nothing
it.
There's nothing to it. It's just charm.
I mean, if we're going to be technical, there's nothing. It's literally a legal joke. It's the most Hollywood movie that's not about Hollywood that's ever Hollywood.
Yes. Yeah. And it's the sequels are atrocious.
Well, though. I remember when I was a kid where there was like some TV special about like classic Christmas movies, and it was hosted by whoever Dr. Quinn was.
Oh, that she was in Live and Let Die.
Jane Seymour.
Yeah,
her. And it was like an hour long, and it might be on Netflix now. I think it was back in the day around Christmas, and it was like just her giving an overview of Christmas. And he's like, lady, who are you to talk about Christmas movies? Because she defended colorism in that special, and that pissed me off.
She's a Goba baby. Do you remember like when she did the Gerber baby? It's like, you know, shouldn't your baby be a Goba baby? And you're like, I don't think that's how you say it. I'm pretty sure it's not.
Is she Australian?
Came across that way, but I don't think believe she is.
Yeah, master accentsman.
So that's how she said it.
So when the Crocodile Dundee regenerates, he's going to turn into Jane Seymour, and it'll be the first female Crocodile Dundee.
Better movie.
There you go.
Anyway, we probably need to talk about the movie we actually did.
Do we?
No.
Can we talk about the three rules?
Oh, no midnight feedings.
Don't get them
time
wet.
Never specified.
And no, I keep them out of like direct sunlight.
Yeah,
keep them out of sunlight because it'll kill them, and they hate bright light.
Yeah, yeah.
Light bright.
Yes. Do not get them wet.
And don't feed them after midnight. No, but the problem is that is the most vague, innocuous rule of the whole bunch.
Well, I actually checked the Tribune about one of those rules because it was upsetting me that it takes place during Christmas and they were covered in snow but not getting wet. Apparently, it has to be already pure liquid water for that to work.
Oh, God.
Okay, no. No. Let's just step away from that bit of rampant stupidity and just, you can't feed them after midnight. Okay, when's the crossover time? Do you get to feed them the day they're born, and then once it's past midnight, you're screwed?
I assume that once it was dawn, you were safe.
But it's
never specified.
It's never specified.
Right.
It's like,
guys, this is stupid. I mean, it's like that George Carlin bit about you had to have Eucharist once before Lent ends. But what if you cross the international date line and you started the day over again, but you missed the day? It's bullshit.
Yeah,
it's a Joe Dante movie that was, it's a Chris Columbus movie directed by Joe Dante.
There's no such thing as a Chris Columbus movie. Let's be honest.
Sure, there is. You have
Home Alone,
1492, The Conquest of Paradise.
That was Ridley Scott.
The first
way to kill the joke, the first
over your head.
I understood the joke. I just was not going to respond to it.
The first two Harry Potter movies.
And Goonies. He wrote Goonies.
Ah.
He also wrote 9 Months, which is a shame.
Oh.
Oh. He also wrote Christmas with the Cranks, which is a bigger shame.
Should we start following him around with a bell, chanting shame, shame?
Oh, he's long deserved that. For Stepmom, at the very least.
I will admire Chris Columbus for one thing. Like, in the same year, he executive produced The Witch and, like, The Young Jesus, and that is some A-plus trolling right there.
Oh, The Witch, the Nicholas Roeg movie?
No, the one from, like, a couple years ago.
Oh, that he did that?
Yeah, he executive produced that.
Oh, wow.
What's The Young Jesus?
I'll give you one guess.
Oh.
It's not good.
Dune.
This one. It came out last year. It was a huge flop.
So.
It was written by Anne Rice.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. She had that period for like 5 years where she was super Catholic and wrote nothing but Jesus novels.
Which is not unusual for a vampire metaphor to show up.
Well, only Interview with a Vampire was good. After that, she was just kind of coasting.
Buddy. It's a Catholic metaphor, right?
Like, I know.
You drink of one's blood to get everlasting life. It's really stupid. Almost as stupid as what we...
Well, I'll...
Segue.
Yeah.
Daniel, since we're going to edit... Like, we're not going to edit anything. What am I talking
about? We never do.
That requires work.
Yeah. Daniel, would you please give me your plot synopsis of this tripe?
Okay, so some inventor who invents all these, like, Ron Poupe devices, including the bathroom buddy...
Mr. Popeil, I'm in trouble.
Yes. He buys his kid a weird creature called a Mogwai in this little shop in Chinatown, and they tell him, okay, if you're going to buy this pet, you can't do these three things. You can't get him wet, you can't expose him to sunlight, and you can't feed him after midnight.
Question. Did he pay for the Mogwai?
Yes, he did. He pays the kid.
He does pay the kid. Okay.
So, something like that. Because at the end, the shopkeeper, spoilers, when he comes back, he like throws the crumpled up bills on the couch. But anyway, he takes the Mogwai home, and immediately all three rules are broken. So, eventually, if Mogwai eat after midnight, they morph into these creatures which resemble the gremlins from the 1940s, which one of the very racist neighbors helps points out.
That guy's such a dickhead.
Oh, he is indeed. And
he's in the sequel too.
Yeah, he was. Even though he died in this one. Like,
did he die?
Run over by a snowplow.
At the end of the movie, their reference is still being alive. He's maybe he's got knocked over, not crushed.
That still makes no sense. But anyway, eventually there's hundreds of gremlins running around because they broke those three rules and they wreak havoc on the town. And it's up to the kid, Billy Peltzer, and his girlfriend, who is Phoebe Cates from Fast Times at Ridgemont High,
PTSD.
Yeah. To save the town. Well, oh, and it's the same town as Back to the Future.
Well, of course, it's the studio backlot.
I know.
Yeah. It's also like, don't they make fun of the fact that it's almost exactly the same as It's a Wonderful Life?
Yeah. Well, they show clips of It's a Wonderful Life just to establish that it's a Christmas.
Yes, but when he's running down the road and they do the same thing and it's like...
Yeah.
He runs past the movie house.
Merry Christmas, you wonderful old gremlins!
Where they're showing Snow White, I think.
Yes.
Which is a very weird pull.
Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work we go.
Did I mention that the gremlins have very weird voices? One of them is voiced by Howie Mandel.
No, that's actually the Mogwai.
Main character.
Yeah. That's Gizmo.
So we should, I guess, get into this. I don't know what to say about this movie because it's...
I love it.
I find it utterly charming.
I've got a story about this movie, if I may.
Oh, please.
I'm just looking at the character name.
Okay. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me if it was Mr. Wayne. They'd go for those cheap jokes. The first time I saw this was late 90s, early 2000s, and it was on cable, and it scared the shit out of me.
Oh, as a child, this movie is genuinely terrifying.
Yeah.
And then I watched a couple years later when it was on HBO, and it was like over the summer when my brother and I were just like home alone because both my parents were working. So it's like, oh, what are we going to do? Watch Gremlins. And it was the most hilarious thing. And in fact, it was so good, it was like on again 2 hours later. So we just watched Gremlins all day pretty much.
Yeah, same thing happened to me with Sallow. First time, it was horrifying. Second time, laugh riot.
So,
Serbian film, are you saying comedy of the year?
Oh, good lord! Are you saying that there should have been a scene where the gremlins eat poop?
I'm sure that's in the deleted scenes.
Oh boy,
Joe Dante has a weird sense of humor.
There's an unrated director's cut.
Never watch Sallow if you're not really prepared for it. Good lord!
How about we just say never watch Sallow?
It's fine if you're prepared for what it is, but if you're not, then...
I don't know what it is, and I don't want to know what it is at this point, so I'm just going to...
Me and Jeremy after this.
Not going to.
What's the Greek movie where they don't tell the kids there's an outside world?
Dogtooth.
Yeah, I put those two in the same category.
Oh, Dogtooth is much tamer.
Well, but it is, I think, a more complete movie, but that's another story for another day.
Yeah.
What I said holy shit at was, okay, there's this radio host who has a Indiana Jones thing called Rockin' Ricky Rialto.
Yeah.
He's played by Don Steele, who's the guy from Death Race 2000, the narrator, who's like,
Hi
there, guys.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Well, I mean, Joe Dante was one of Roger Corman's protégés back in the day, wasn't he?
Oh, I'm sure. There's a lot.
Yeah, he did Piranha.
Yeah.
He did Piranha.
And the director of Death Race 2000 is in the sequel, so... It all works out.
I love Death Race 2000 so much. That's a movie I put on sometimes for just 10 minutes. I will just watch anything. Like, that's such a good movie.
Well, the weird thing about Gremlins, and I feel like I'm going to need to pull us back on topic a bit, is it's considered this great nostalgic piece, and, like, everybody references it as this, like, classic 80s movie. I don't know. It just seemed kind of standard to me.
I find the Gremlins charming.
Oh, they're very charming.
It's very 80s. It does feel like an 80s movie, like solidly in that category. There's nothing definitively that you know, hallmarks other 80s movies by making this movie, but it does feel very 80s.
Now, this might be the most meta question I've ever asked. What is an 80s movie?
I feel like if you have to ask that question, you don't understand what an 80s movie is.
It's all in the hair, Dan. All in the hair.
And the shoulder pads.
We were talking about Stranger Things before this. Stranger Things is an interesting thing because no one dresses like they're in the 1980s. But that makes it more 1980s.
Stranger Things is a show about the 80s that people learned about the 80s. From other movies.
Right.
Yes. Yeah,
it's not from people who actually lived through.
No.
No. That's why it's clever.
I would argue that the prom scene at the end of season 2 is a very 80s fashion thing.
Well, I mean, and that's what I was going to say. Like, the thing that feels the most 80s about anything is something like Back to the Future, because nothing says 1980s like dry humping the 50s.
Yeah, that's...
Right? You know, and like, the fashion and the thoughts behind it, right? And so when
the
you
use
look...
of the word bitchin'. Oh
yes.
Thanks,
I,
11.
I think that was a thing, though, now that you're saying about Gremlins, is it really was supposed to be this clean-cut Christmas movie, and then they turn it around and make it this monstrous, horrifying
What I love
thing.
Is you dig into it and realize that this movie, without Steven Spielberg, would have been... much more horrifying.
Oh yeah, no.
Oh, yeah.
He cut it. He very friendly. He was like, well, because first of all, Stripe was supposed to be the Gremlin version of Gizmo.
Ah,
like, and all of that, and he was like, no, Gizmo's the hero, is one of the heroes. Like, you can't do that. He's too cute.
Well, they based Gizmo on like Spielberg's dog, and then turned him into a monster. And Spielberg's like, I'm kind of against that.
He's also they wanted to kill the his dog.
Yeah, and kill
his,
the mom.
Yeah, and his mom. And they're like, no, we're not doing that either.
I mean, I will also say the charm works because they keep bringing it back to being like a kid's movie, right?
Well, it's based on Looney Tunes a lot. All the Gremlins act like different Chuck Jones characters. Who is in the movie, by the way?
He is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he's the guy at the bar, Matt, because he just perked his eyebrows, so I feel I have to explain this. He's the guy at the bar that Billy Peltzer shows one of his cartoons to about, what's her name, Mrs. Deagle?
Yeah.
And the guy's like, oh yeah, the old witch never looked better. That's Chuck Jones.
Yeah, that's Chuck Jones. Wow. But to be fair, if it were Chuck Jones, he probably would have drawn boobs on it.
Which is really funny because he referenced, it's almost a reference back to... Yeah. True. It references back to the Bugs Bunny Gremlins cartoon, you know, kind of like there as well, because that was part of what this is going back to.
You know, it's funny you say that, though. I think this one feels more... I think this is, like most movies, better than the sequels, but the sequels feels more like an 80s movie to me. Even though it came out in 1990, it definitely has more of the...
It was filmed in the 80s.
There's much more cocaine involved.
Well, there's Hulk Hogan for no reason. Yeah.
Well, the tongue was more firmly in the cheek in the sequel, which is why I think it would hold up better, to be honest.
Well, in 1988, we discovered sarcasm.
Oh, yeah.
Did we?
Oh, really? Yeah. Reagan was gone. We were filled with bullshit again. It was fine. I'm surprised one didn't show up in a suit because it was 84, man. It was the Reaganist of Reagan.
We stopped saying no for no good reason.
Well, they have the young Donald Trump bank employee who is kind of annoying toward Barney.
Yeah, not Barney. Judge Reinhold.
That's what makes it an 80s movie. He's
Judge Reinhold was in it. Jesus.
Well, the
big thing about like people going against the 80s.
No, I'm not going to let you move past it. Judge Reinhold cannot be tough to anyone. No. I could beat up Judge Reinhold when I was 7. Like he
still, even in 2017, looks like a guy who'd ask if a guy can jerk off in peace.
He's still alive.
Yes. Yes,
that's
he is.
Mean, dude.
No, I mean, I'm sure he's a charming guy, but he's never done anything to me that's intimidating. He plays a good older brother dressed like a pirate in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
That's true.
Apparently right? Arrested last year for screaming at the TSA. Wait,
he did.
Oh, he's the hero we all need. Yeah.
Haven't we all wanted to? Yeah.
And by screaming, he was like, now guys, this is a little inappropriate.
If you're going to touch me there, I need your phone number.
Right.
So I mean, Judge Ryan
heard screaming, what do you mean you don't know who I am?
Them casting him as the dad in the stepdad in the Santa Claus who's a therapist is perfect because he's just wearing sweaters going, now how does that make you feel? That's all he asks.
Yeah.
He's the most milquetoast actor in Hollywood.
Oh God, yes.
Which is why it's funny when he's against Eddie Murphy in those
The Beverly Hills Cop. I love those movies. And when I love when he keeps getting worse, more and more weapons. And it's like, we gotta talk.
Because he's gonna be a Columbine shooter. He's just like, people are mean to me, so I'm gonna kill them all. Like, he unblinkingly stares at the camera for a second. Oh.
Wasn't Gilbert Gottfried one of the villains in Beverly Hills Cop?
No, he wasn't a villain. He wasn't a good guy, but he was the accountant for all of them. And they promised they were going to send him to jail for all of his wife's parking, or all of his parking tickets. So, oh, okay. Oh, and he gets, and he just goes for it. And it's just, it was hilarious.
Valky Bartakamoos is the weapons dealer that they keep running into in all three of those movies.
Right.
We're going to do one of those.
Yes, please.
So one of the big things.
One, right?
Oh, God, yes. It has to be. No, yes, please. Please. I'll be there for that. Jeremy can go home.
John Landis classic right there. So one of the things about 80s movies, I'm going to answer my own meta question, is that they really were trying to go against the milquetoast Reagan view of society about how everything was better in the 50s. And Well, you know, all those white people were happy. And I think this kind of does that. I mean, the town is this, like, very simple, small town that really doesn't exist anymore with... There are antagonists like Mrs. Deagle, the real estate developer, but it's pretty standard. She is Miss Gold.
Literally a cartoon character.
Oh, God, yes.
Capitalist. Like, she's...
It's a Wonderful Life. She's Mr. Potter.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's hilarious, and it's one of those moments where when you watch her die, you don't even shed a tear. You're
tickle,
like,
tickle, tickle.
No, I mean you're really convinced that the Gremlins are the good guys.
Yeah.
I'm not ready.
Well, I think that's a part of it. I mean, the Gremlins are in some ways the good guys because they're destroying the traditional values of small town America.
No. They're not destroying the traditional values of small town America. They're raking open the festering wound that everyone pretends doesn't exist.
You just made a Freudian slip there, and I think we need to go back
to raping
that.
It.
Yeah, they're raping. Well, yeah.
What festering wound, Mrs. Deagle?
All the secrets that the small town life and the perfect, you know, nuclear family is this wonderful, all of that.
It's the same thing that Blue Velvet did, except they were more explicit about it.
Well, I mean, and then
because this was subtle.
I need is a gas mask.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and everything.
Heineken, fuck that shit.
Very subtle then, because very subtle then, because I didn't really get that. I mean,
they even do the horror movie trope of making the thing is they don't sin; they're just assholes.
Yeah,
if this was a Freddy movie or not Freddy, if this was a Michael Myers movie or a Jason movie, they would have been the teens making out. They would have been like that kind of thing.
Well, they're just kind of pure id. They do whatever they feel like,
right?
Whether it be good or bad. I mean, sitting in a theater watching Snow White and singing along isn't evil. It's just thing.
But what I'm saying here is the people they kill or attack are the assholes. It's Mrs. Deagle. It's the racist neighbor. It's all that stuff that is.
What about the Santa Claus that they kill?
He was a pedophile. That was a cut scene, you know.
All right. Well, there is a cut scene, speaking of that, where apparently they go after Judge Reinhold and lock him in a bank vault or something.
Oh, then it's literally the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Because
Judge Reinhold going, that's not fair.
Yeah, because if you wanted to subvert, like, the 50s small town, it'd be something more like It, where everyone is horribly monstrous behind the scenes.
It's the same idea.
Pile of cocaine.
It's the same idea that Stephen King had, because he, you know, he was
did
a
pile
kid
of
in
cocaine.
The 50s, and, well, he did a pile of cocaine, but he was a kid in the 50s, and looking back on it, he just saw a lot of darkness.
Well, no, and that's the thing, and that's kind of why Stranger Things works, just to bring it real back for that whole point, why with this 80s nostalgia wave, is you've got all of these adults in the right age group, and now a lot of us were more past the 80s than not, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, harkening back, it's like used to be movies like harkening back to the 50s, the 60s, or even the 70s, and now we've moved forward a decade, and now it's the 80s. And that's kind of what we harken back to, because a lot of your demographic that fits your 30 to 50 is people that remember the 80s in some degree more than not.
Yeah.
And
I think you need about 20 years to be nostalgic, because you start seeing 50s nostalgia things like Happy Days in the 70s.
You don't need that much time for nostalgia anymore, Matt.
No, you don't.
You need about 2 years for nostalgia,
I
think.
See how excited I was when they started doing Homestar Runner again.
Yes.
Ugh.
How did you feel when they bought Mystery Science Theater 3000 back?
Hey, I'm working for one of their writers. I'm very happy about this.
Come check out Cineprov the first Thursday of every month at the Plaza Atlanta Theater. Can I talk about the big scene that everybody still feels is kind of controversial because tonally it's so weird? Oh, I like your approach.
Yeah, why not? I'm going to get more beer.
Go for it.
The scene with Phoebe Cates talking about how her father died while dressed as Santa Claus.
The world is falling apart. It's on fire. And she has this moment of just losing touch with reality as she harkens back to the death of her father.
No, it's not losing touch with reality, because they had implied earlier that she really hated Christmas because of that.
No, they did. But the world is literally going to shit.
This is not the time for a 30-second monologue. A 3-minute monologue. This is not 30 seconds. Oh, lo is my family.
I don't care. I thought it was funny.
Oh, no. We're agreeing with you.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was such a dark story, but
it's incredibly
so weird.
Tone deaf.
That's the thing. It's such a dark scene, but it's so funny at the same time because it's so ridiculous. For those who haven't seen this movie,
reason I hate Christmas is I'm Phoebe Cates. essentially, what it is...
So you're going to take your top off for me by a pool?
In a fantasy dream sequence.
By Judge Reinhold.
By Judge Reinhold.
Oh, God.
God, what was the line... do you think they had the same... They must have had the same agent. That's why they showed up in a bunch of films together. By a bunch of films, I mean it's Judge Reinhold, so it's three.
Three in the Clerks cartoon that existed back in 2000.
Where he was literally Judge Reinhold?
Yes, the Honorable Judge Reinhold.
Okay, so... effectively, the story is... The reason she hates Christmas is... On Christmas Eve, her dad went out, and then he didn't show up the next morning. So... They looked for him for days. There was an APB. And then after a week, a smell started coming from the chimney because her father, dressed as Santa Claus, decided to climb down the chimney, got stuck, broke his neck, and died with a sack full of presents.
Now, when I was four,
did they still get the presents, though?
When I was four, there was a neighbor who would dress up like Santa every year and entertain
and
us.
Can you imagine an Atari 2600 that smells like dead Santa?
I'm still playing Tank.
The problem is it's 84. Next year would be in an NES. It's a terrible year for Santa to die.
It is a terrible year.
The next year.
How am I going to... We haven't mentioned that Corey Feldman is in this movie.
He's the one who creates the gremlins.
Yes,
he is.
He's the
one who knocks over the water.
The water cup.
He creates the more Mogwai. It's them yanking the cord on the alarm clock and him feeding them.
Well, they're the evil ones. So had Corey Feldman not screwed things up, there would have been no gremlins.
I'm going to ask you nerds a question. You two, especially. I mean, you can guess.
He pointed at me, just so you know.
Asshole. Chris Columbus was nominated for one Academy Award.
For producing The Help.
Look at the balls on Jeremy. Oh.
I didn't even have to finish the question. Good for you. How about this, asshole? They've announced Gremlins 3 for next year,
not
so you can
happen.
Go.
Not going to happen.
Bullshit.
They did.
Oh, God.
Because Spielberg needs more money.
I can picture Gremlins reboot, but it would look kind of weird. I mean...
I'll be perfectly honest. No one needs to make Gremlins 3. I mean, Chris Columbus is an executive producer, and he has the characters, because he wrote the script.
He wrote it.
I mean, so no one needs to make this movie.
No.
They could make a Next Generation thing, where, you know...
No, that was Gremlins 2. There's no need for another Gremlins movie, and this is someone who loves both Gremlins movies.
And here's the problem. They'd be CGI.
And yeah, that's the other problem.
Suck.
And that's one of the good things about this movie that really draws you in. The gremlins look fucking amazing.
And because they're there.
I mean, they're charming because you can look at Gizmo's eyes and they're like a doll's eyes. But I mean, they look like something you can grab. And Daniel brought up this nightmare. They made gremlin Furbies.
Yes.
No. That was the best part.
They made Furbies. Gizmo Furbies.
No. They made Furbies. They got sued because Furbies looked too much like Gizmo and had to make a Gizmo Furby just to get to and give all the proceeds to the Spielberg and Columbia, because that was the problem with the original Furbies.
Oh, that's so funny.
Because they looked too much like Gizmo.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So if we were to make a Stranger Things-like thing for the 90s, it would just be a bunch of 80s references and then like Tamagotchis, right? Like,
pretty much.
And then a Pulp Fiction episode.
Beanie Babies.
Oh.
Princess Di.
Tickle Me Elmo.
Oh. 1998 was a rough year.
And considering what the guy who did Elmo did.
Maybe some Bill Clinton jokes too.
Well, I mean, yeah.
We pay tons in income tax.
Well, and then a saxophone solo.
And then a saxophone
then a saxophone solo.
Also, what's his name? That guy who looks like a lizard that was Speaker of the House at the time?
Newt.
Yes, Newt Gingrich.
No, his name is a lizard.
His name is a lizard. He looked like a he looked like someone who had been on the Atkins diet.
Oh, I've met him. I've met him. He's a royal douchebag.
Oh, like, I mean, he is.
Flat out met him several times.
Minutes from here.
I know.
Anyway,
so he would be the perfect gremlin then, just going around the offices.
Big. He'd look like a gremlin.
I'll give him. He's smarter than saying he'd write stuff in crayon. He'd be the mastermind gremlin.
No, he is not smarter.
No, he is. He has a PhD.
No.
Bullshit. He wrote about how. This is honest to God. I read his dissertation at one point. He wrote about how the Belgians invading the Congo were a general good thing.
Oh, good Lord.
15 million dead people, but there were roads. I'm not kidding, man.
Wait. So you're telling me that literally we're defending that level of statism because my roads.
Right. Imperial racism.
I'm pretty sure that's a comedy bit from Life of Brian about what the Romans gave the Israelis. It's
my roads, but who's going to build the roads?
What did the Romans ever do?
Front of Judea.
What did the Romans ever build for us? The aqueduct, sir.
My favorite part of that joke is he goes, I thought we were the people's front of Judea, and then one guy in the background just gets up and walks away.
Yeah.
Like, he was literally part of the wrong crew. And everyone's tuned out. I'm sorry.
No.
we're not drunk enough is really what this comes down
here's
to.
Here's the thing. I have a feeling, what percentage would you guess has seen this movie? 30%, 40% of our audience?
I would hope so.
I would imagine it's quite a bit because it was everywhere for a while.
About 10 years ago. I mean, up until about 10 years ago, this movie showed at least once a year on TBS.
Does anybody remember the commercial that was around after the Gizmo Furby came out?
No.
Okay, it was, and I'm sure our listeners can correct me if I'm wrong, but it was like the guy, the inventor guy, coming in, not the actual actor, but it was a different guy, coming into the Chinese shop and buying the Furby.
Oh, gross. Oh, that's disgusting.
Well, I remember when I was a little kid, when I wasn't allowed to see Gremlins 2 and it came out, they had a commercial where a spike trying to get you to go to stay in this hotel chain. So you got this little monster popping out of a suitcase and talking about this hotel.
There's an entertaining level of product placement in like commercial TV that we just don't have the same way today, makes me happy and sad at the same time.
The problem is commercials all feel like they have to be really funny now.
But you know the best part about that is, you know, just going completely off topic because we're not there already. Is that when you make a really funny commercial, you remember the joke, you laugh at the joke. You don't remember the product. Like, yeah, we remember Jake from State Farm just because it's Jake from State Farm, but every other like funny commercial, like, oh yeah, that was funny.
No, it's really hard. I was thinking of the Real Men of Genius ads because they say Bud Light 30 times in that ad, but you don't. Like the Clever Hardee's ads right now.
Arby's is hilarious, but I'm not going to eat at Arby's. I know better.
Speaking of references, Arby's is great, by the way.
It is not.
Speaking of references,
go to a Jewish deli, my friend.
Oi, give all.
Sponsored by Judaism.
What do we think of all the references that the Gremlins were making, like the Flashdance Gremlin and the Noir Gremlin and all that stuff? Well, oh, yeah, and the bar.
Gremlin and
was a different line of cocaine.
Well, there was that scene in the bar where it was like the gremlin in the fedora who shoots the guy that comes up to his table.
Oh, my God.
Which
gremlin
was a great
in the fedora,
scene.
Was that the first MRA?
Oh. I'd say the first MRA was the guy that came up to his table with the hand puppets, but what do I know?
Oh my God, that was the stupidest joke. The best part of that gag, honestly, is that...
can we talk about the dead science teacher, the token black guy?
Oh.
Because he died first.
Because he died first.
That is a character that Stranger Things directly copied into their show.
It did. No, flat out, he is the science teacher, except the science teacher in Stranger Things is white and not black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but and it's also the, like, he has a weird thing going on. He's like, can I dissect one of your gremlins? Right? Because, like, he's running.
Can I just imagine, like, also him, like, narrating the whole thing at the end, holding a cigarette, you know, going, you know, and as you leave the Twilight Zone.
Yeah. No, because, like, literally, he takes an eyedropper.
and he drops a drop of water on. Another gremlin comes out. Could I have that one? And you're just like, the fuck is he going to do to these gremlins?
Well,
like,
he ends up with a syringe on his ass because he took the blood test. So
the most dedicated science teacher ever. He's still there at midnight.
He was there at like 2 a.m. It was amazing.
That's why the gremlin got his sandwich and evolved.
Yeah, we there was a clock in the background and it said 2:30. I'm like, dude, do you have a life?
You don't get to do an illegal alien autopsy every day.
You don't. This is true.
I also love, I mean, Daniel and I got into this a little bit when we were watching the movie together. I mean, we had a date. But like, there was this moment where,
how come we always get in a fight?
Yeah, right.
They rounded the bases. It's
like, how old is this kid supposed to be? He's clearly graduated from high school and then stayed in his hometown because he's working
at the bank. Yeah.
Well, I've heard from not the Tribune, but from TV Tropes. So Matt just got excited that the original script was like he was a 13 or 14 year old kid, and they cast Zach Galligan.
Whatever. Who cares?
At this point.
Well, yes, he depending on the job he had,
a coke party or like a rape.
Well, depending on the job he had at the bank, he might not need to go to college. So if he's 19, 20,
well, that's
sense.
The thing. They cast an older actor, but they originally wrote it for a younger actor. So
yeah, Zach Galligan.
It should have been. Who's in it? Feldman. One of the
Corey Feldman.
It should have been his movie. It would have been fine. It wouldn't have been any different.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Corey Feldman's a particularly good. He's a very rapeable actor.
Oh, dude, no.
Too soon.
Did he kill himself?
No, that's Hane.
Well, Hane.
Also too soon.
Hane didn't kill himself. He just was.
He died
like,
of an overdose because.
He was a huge drug addict.
Oh man.
I held off on making a joke about him.
Reference to South Park. You know?
Hey, I held off on making a. Yeah, but he screws up. That might be why he got. Oh, never mind.
Lucas.
I'm glad that you married me out, dug me out by making your own rape joke, but then you said you weren't going to make. That's good.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, thanks. Phoebe Cates doesn't have a career either. I'm just looking for.
Well, she's Kevin Kline's wife and mother to his
kids. Better than Kevin Spacey. It's, you know.
Yeah. I think she owns a boutique in New York or something now.
Something like that.
Russian. Oh, come on. The money she made from that and then what he makes, she's fine. Like, you know, it doesn't matter. She doesn't have
a career. She's making Mr. Fish odor money.
Yeah, exactly right. She was in Lake.
It's a Bob's Burgers reference, Matt. Go watch Bob's Burgers.
Please do. It's awesome. Princess Caribou. Ugh.
Oh, the woman that pretended to be a princess from Asia, right?
That was the movie. She was Princess Caribou.
Yeah, all right.
And she was in Drop Dead Fred. I think that was.
Oh.
That Aussie dipshit.
Yeah, she hurt for about 7 years. She didn't really do anything.
She didn't do anything from 2001
to 2015.
Yeah, we're looking at the same
thing. Yes, okay, we are.
Another break, I suppose.
She was in the second one, too. She was fine in this movie.
No,
she's... My favorite bit is when she's still serving them drinks.
Actually, yeah.
There's like the bar is filled with gremlins.
Oh, that was great when she got flashed by the trench coat gremlin.
Yeah, he just walks up and shows his bits, which you can't see because it's a puppet.
Yeah, it's a puppet, so there's
nobody gave
there.
It bits.
I just do love the idea.
It reproduces with
lovingly sewing together a penis for a gremlin.
You mean like the Navy pilot that drew one in the sky? I gotta get props to that man.
The pilot, the Navy had to apologize for doing an air penis.
It's better than buzzing the tower.
Man.
Yes, that would be circumcised.
Well, Putin's America. What can you do?
Boo. Fucking cheap joke. She got thanked in one thing. She got thanked in The Squid and the Whale for, I guess, helping what's his Noah Baumbach achieving manhood.
No, her kid's in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's one of the family members.
No, all right.
I like The Squid and the Whale. It's just so random. She grew a chin. Look at that.
She did.
I don't think we need to criticize anybody for growing a chin looking around the table here. Or maybe that's just me.
Hey, man, I grew a beard to make sure I have twice the chin as a normal person.
Oh, there you go.
I have a Thor level of chin. Watch Thor Ragnarok.
Yes, please watch Thor Ragnarok.
So are you the crimson chin?
Here comes the crimson chin.
All right, so...
back to the movie.
Yeah, I'll draw everybody back in. The Snow White scene. What do we think of that? Where
fucking weird.
Yeah.
So you have, like, they hired every puppeteer in Hollywood to do one scene, to dance back and forth while they put on a single, one single reel of Snow White, because they ran out of a reel.
It looked like the scene from the Muppet movie, where all the Muppets are in the theater watching the Muppet movie.
That's literally what they must be referencing. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Oh, no, no, I guarantee you, they're probably on the same stage. Like, they probably just got it, because they needed a puppeteer set stage. And they probably... Jim Henson was not dead at this point.
Yeah, why didn't they ask Jim Henson to do all the puppet work?
Because Jim Henson doesn't like doing movies that are this scary. If you remember correctly, Jim Henson actually got upset after the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie because he thought it was too graphic.
Yeah.
He thought it was too violent, and so they had to scale it back for the second.
Well, and in order to do, what was it, Labyrinth, they had to give him partial creative control.
Well, he directed Labyrinth, so...
No, what's the other one? Dark Crystal.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is really creepy, but... He
tries to balance it because his goal is a family.
Although actually you might be right. I was thinking it might be one of the sets from the Muppet Show, because occasionally they do the turnaround where they're looking at the audience and there's puppets in the audience.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. I bet they. Yeah, because I bet he wouldn't mind them using the set. Just he wouldn't be one to help them for it.
And if, in case you guys have not seen this, and but have seen Inglourious Basterds, this is literally the Hitler killing scene where they burn the theater down by sneaking behind. You see the shadows, and then they burn the fucker down.
Yep.
Oh god, that might be one of the most satisfying scenes in cinema.
Well, it was weird because they cut back while it was burning, and there's like that one gremlin with the surgical mask on, and he's holding the knife and laughing while everything's burning around him. It's like, what the hell, man?
They reference movies for no reason, and I imagine the original script had more of this because it seems out of place a lot of the time. But like, you do have a gremlin who's dressed like the guy from the fuck is that Dustin Hoffman movie, Marathon Man?
Yeah,
is it that, safe?
That's the second one, yeah.
Just like for kids.
Is it safe?
But yeah, PG-13 is now something we're pretty okay with showing on TV. Mm-hmm. So. This movie I saw bits of on just TNT or whatever.
Oh, yeah, 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 all the time back in the day.
Anything else you want to touch on? Like, we've gone long enough. This movie I find charming, but in that way that... I mean, yeah, it's a good palate cleanser for Christmas, but there's just not a lot to talk about.
Well I thought it was pretty funny.
I'd like to touch on the ending a little bit, because that's where it really is like trying to combine horror with comedy, where it's Stripe in the department store doing a slasher parody by like attacking a Billy with a chainsaw.
Matt, what were you saying?
Well, I mean, I'm reviewing my notes in the movie, and I thought it was really funny. You know, it's a horror comedy. I mean, you guys are saying the second one was even funnier, so that's, I guess, something to look forward to. But, I mean, this works equally well as either, which we've touched on already.
Well, with this one, you have to kind of know what they're referencing and what they're trying to make fun of, whereas in the second
one... Gremlins movie's a real fucking think piece, Daniel.
I probably don't know most of what they're referencing, because I'm not as much of a film buff as you are, but it's just funny, like when the mom just destroys three gremlins for messing with their kitchen.
I'm gonna stop you right here for 1 second. Phoebe Cates has an archived footage film credit, okay, in 2007 for a video documentary, Mr. Skin's Top 100 Nude Scenes. Number one, Fast Time at Ridgemont High.
Well, it's a classic. I mean,
it's an amazing scene.
Oh,
it's
good.
It's a great scene, yeah. But I'm just
good
like,
lord. Oh, boy.
What stupid bullshit is this?
Are you saying that Fast Times at Ridgemont High isn't the greatest nude scene?
I'm just saying, she has so few film credits anyway, it's really fucking sad that that's one of her film credits. Anyway, go ahead. Anything else you guys want to talk about? We're almost out of time.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I really would like to touch on the third act, where it's in the department store and Stripe is trying to kill Billy. It's a great scene, but that was what really frightened me as a kid, especially the bit with the chainsaw.
Oh, yeah. It gets real for about 4 seconds.
Yeah, it does.
No, I mean, that's it. Like, and then you're like, wait, maybe he's going to multiply by jumping in that fountain, and
Well, he does touch the fountain and tries to multiply.
And then they electrocute him.
Yep. No, they expose... Gizmo raises the curtains and they expose him to sunlight.
Right. Thank you. It becomes Dracula at the end.
His skeleton jumps out of the fountain and melts, which
that
was...
That might be the truly horrifying...
Oh, that was... Oh, yeah, big time.
Oh, so real quick, important point, because I was trying to figure out, because frankly, if you're in the middle of the 1980s, if you're doing puppet work at all, Henson in some way has to be partially involved. Now, while he was not involved with Gremlins, because this is not a movie he would be involved in, the guy who basically made all of the puppets for Gremlins was Chris Wallace, and the year before, in 1983, he was a creature consultant on Return of the Jedi, which means he worked with Jim Henson, which means, frankly, he got the necessary background work to make this, is why these puppets look fantastic.
So right. Jim Henson is the Jedi Master and he's the apprentice?
Yes, basically that's what I'm working Jim on. Henson. If you're looking at the 80s at puppetry work, either you have the guys that did Aliens or you've got Henson. And that's where it had to come from, one or the other. It
have
really
you ever
did.
Have seen Jim Henson's The Cube?
I have seen The Cube.
Yes.
Oh, that was a good movie.
Oh, yes.
Good little TV movie from the 60s.
It's the 60s. That, for a second, I thought about that one where they're in a prison in space. It's like a maze.
Space prison?
No, that was later, and that's also a good movie. But Jim Henson, back in the day, directed this TV movie where...
honestly positive that Henson was fully in favor of legalization.
he directed this TV movie that was...
I wish he was just in favor of regular medicine. He died of strep throat, for Christ's sake.
I know. It was kind of the same thing. Like, it was this guy trapped in a cube trying to get out, and all these people are coming in and tormenting him, but he can't leave. It was great.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
It's on Filmstruck, if anybody subscribes to Filmstruck.
Who does that?
Yeah, well, it's on their streaming channel, yeah.
And Criterion is going to be releasing a Godzilla box set soon.
Ooh. Like the original Japanese Gojira?
Well, they put the first one out already.
Yeah, no, it's Gojira.
They have the rights to the other ones now.
Good.
And something else I've noticed is it's like Jaws. You don't see the gremlins in their entirety for most of the movie. You see like a claw here. Maybe you see a brief body shot of one of them.
They do a very good job at building the horror level. It's just, you know, the comedy in between that makes you kind of go, well, what is this?
True in the first act where you don't really see the gremlins, but by the second act,
once
they're
you
all
see
on
them,
display.
But once you see it, it like the veil is off.
Well, and they do a Freddy Krueger thing where they have the claws cutting through.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of clever.
What do we think of the gremlin in the microwave? That was funny.
Oh my god, that was brutal.
Oh, it was. Oh man, wow, yeah.
And that was 1980s radiation. Like, that's something special.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck the metric system.
She said, get out of my kitchen.
I do want to bring up another childhood memory here, which is one of my favorite childhood memories about watching this was watching it with my brother, who had the best riff I've ever heard on a movie ever, which was during the kitchen scene with the mom. That scene where the gremlins are just fucking around. There was this bit where there's a gremlin just playing in a food processor and threatening the mom, and the mom turns it on and kills the gremlin. And my brother's riff at the time was, yes, call now and buy Gremlin in a blender. Call now and we'll include the blender.
I will say, so this when I started watching this movie, I was fairly young, not super young. It's obviously been out for ages because it came out before I was born. But when I watched it, this movie scared the ever-living crap. I mean, it scared me a little bit, but it scared the ever-living crap out of my younger brother.
Well, when I first saw it, my brother left the room. He couldn't take anymore. I actually stayed till the end, and I was like summarizing it for the next day.
So my younger brother hated this movie. Like the music alone would like scare him. And at the time I was learning to play an instrument, and I learned how to play this song, and just to piss my brother off, I mean, play la 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 la. Because in some cases I was truly a horrible brother.
Which brother?
David? My younger one, Stephen.
Oh, Stephen. I have a new
How
ring
many Hermans are there? There's like three, right?
There's three, yeah.
Okay. Should we start calling you Huey, Dewey, and Louie?
That's what I think, yeah.
So next time we go to Disney, we're doing that red, blue, green, and we're going to go around Disney.
Yeah.
You need to stop fiddling with gear.
The spring is sprung.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
There's a gremlin in here. It's messing with all our equipment.
Yeah, if there's anything wrong with this audio pod, the audio.
Blaming the gremlins.
Gremlin, an electro gremlin.
It's a German gremlin.
Goddamn Chinamen and gremlins. Like that.
Oh, we haven't mentioned the neighbor at all. That's
We talked about him being plowed to death.
Because he's a sauerkraut.
Like. Well, he's like this. He's like this old Roger Corman vet. He's great, and he was in a deleted scene in Pulp Fiction, and he's just been around forever.
Well, he's been in everything, too.
He's the ultimate character actor.
Oh, yeah, he is. Yes. And he is, of course, the drunk racist that existed in the 80s and still exists today.
Anyway, we should wrap this up. Final judgments, Matt Quinn.
Okay,
watch it once.
Well, in my blog review from when I saw it with you guys at the Plaza a few years back, that's what I pretty much say, watch it once, because the first time I saw it, it was glorious. The second time is okay. So, I mean, I think it is probably watch once, at least once every few years.
I was going to say, we have a new Matt Quinn scale. How much did you check Facebook during this movie?
Or TV tropes.
Well, the first time I did not at all. The second time a few times, I've already seen it already, and some of the jokes just aren't as fun the second time around.
No one likes a knock-knock joke. I get you. Thank you. This was a 7.5?
Yeah, seven. Yeah, I gave it a 7.5. I mean, I could fiddle with it, make an 8. I mean, it's in that border zone.
Mid-1980s. Jeremy, what do you got?
Yeah, it's a good movie. I wouldn't call it a classic, but if it's on TV, I'll watch it. It definitely has its moments. I love the old woman getting thrown off her
stairwell.
Stairwell.
Yeah, that's always good for a laugh. But yeah, it's a good movie. Then watch it more than once.
Whoa.
It's perfectly charming. I mean, it pitches itself as a family movie, but really little kids shouldn't watch this because it might be too terrifying, and I still stand by that. But I mean, it's perfectly charming, especially if you're looking for 80s nostalgia, because a lot of 80s nostalgics rip this movie off. So it's fine, and I'd at least recommend one watch, maybe two. But we should also check out the sequel in the future.
Yeah, agreed.
I have a genuine, honest question. So Chris Columbus helped do this movie along with Steven Spielberg, and Chris Columbus went on in a couple of years, about 7 years after this, to do another movie that is now definitively also a Christmas movie, Kerthunk, and it was called Home Alone. And given No, I have a point. And it's not to claim that Home Alone is a good movie, because that's not what I'm claiming. I'm claiming that all the shit that Kevin does to the two burglars versus all the shit the gremlins do or is done to the gremlins, it's pretty darn close on a scale of horrifying to other people.
Yeah, Home Alone totally would have been better if Joe Pesci had been blown up in a microwave.
Yeah.
Yes!
He might have fit. He's effectively a gremlin.
So that house in Chicago is the last house on the left.
Oh, that was Wes Craven. That wasn't Chris Columbus.
But someone gets his head stuck in a microwave.
That's in the remake, not in the original.
Give him the joke. That's pretty good.
But this, honestly, I mean, I do enjoy this movie. I agree with Jeremy. If it's on TV, it's worth a watch from beginning to end. And I do own it, and I do watch it on occasion. I don't watch it with any frequency, but it is worth a watch.
You know, Joe Pesci is like a clown. He amuses me just the way he tells the story.
Are you saying he's funny?
Yes.
Are you saying...
How is he funny?
he's like a clown. He amuses me.
Oh, so you think I'm funny.
Danny DeVito is the Joe Pesci of the comedy world.
Yeah.
Which is depressing.
Have you ever seen Danny DeVito and Joe Pesci in the same room?
Dun, dun, dun.
That'd be a very awkward room. Can you imagine if Danny DeVito was in a Scorsese film?
I mean, that level of
hey,
height.
Rob Reiner was in a Scorsese film.
That's true.
That level of height shifts the whole mean over a couple inches.
Russell Crowe beating the shit out of Danny DeVito might be the greatest thing that has ever happened on film. That's a hell of a scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Chris Columbus owned Christmas.
We can't watch that movie.
He did.
Now. Thanks, Kevin Spacey.
Heck no. No, he tried to take it back with Harry Potter, the first one, when you look at the Christmas scenes in that one.
Oh, well, the first two Harry Potter movies suck.
Well, but they came out at Christmas, and they are Christmassy themed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the first two Home Alones are his?
Yes.
That man made a lot of money off of Jesus.
I'm here to talk about...
No, off of Holly.
You're also forgetting, Jeremy, that Kevin Spacey was killed in that movie. Like, shot
also, Richard
blank.
Harris beats the other Dumbledore, hands down.
No.
By a friggin' mile. He stays in character better. When you watch Michael Gambon go off in Goblet of Fire, go, did you put your name in it? That did not happen.
Well, Michael Gambon's an actual actor, whereas Richard Harris is just an old Irish drunk.
And he did a better job at it.
He was in his 80s when he was in Harry Potter.
And he did a good job.
I stand by what I said.
And he did a great job.
He was on death's door.
If I may... Who gives a shit? These movies are old and they're not great, but whatever.
We got some fanboys here.
I know. When did this become the Harry Potter cast? Gringotts podcast. I just need some butterbeer. frankly, my final thoughts on this are this movie is perfectly charming is the word I keep using because I'm thinking that in a remake, it better have Dwayne The Rock Johnson somewhere.
But, Rampage coming out next year? No, Jumanji. We got to take it.
I want to see this year. I want to see that.
Jumanji or Rampage?
Both.
I will watch anything he's in. He's charismatic as fuck. But whatever. This movie is... Fine. I like it. I don't think it's a classic, like you said. And it's a shame because when you say quote-unquote classic, that means more people see it. I don't want this movie to be forgotten in any way. And unfortunately, we glom onto, if we're going to not watch like a funny alt Christmas movie, we're going to watch Die Hard. Watch this, guys. Like, this is not as good, as timeless as Die Hard. I love this movie.
Oh, this movie's, yeah. No, it's great.
And I don't think it's great, but you can love not great things. Not giving an example there. Without further ado, we are out of time. Enjoy our holiday series of not Christmas movies. I forgot to pull up the thing, so I'm stalling for time. What was I going to say?
You can cut.
I will. I'm not going to cut. Everyone's on their phone. This is terrible. I'm not even holding my own audience.
I play this at 2x speed when
I'm not on my phone.
Oh, you listen to it?
Oh, I listen at double speed. Not what I'm on usually, but I always listen at double speed. So
yeah, it's better than some people on this. So next week, by the time this comes out, this is effectively actually our Christmas movie because we've done, at this point, Willy Wonka and Die Hard. So next week, unfortunately, we don't have a movie, but we do have an episode. It's our Myopia Mornings spinoff episode. And we're doing a TV show. It's a cartoon show that we all grew up with, but it has both a Christmas and a Hanukkah episode. So we're going to do both of them. And this is followed by everyone's first introduction to computer pornography, where two kids make a computer babe.
Ooh.
So tune in next week and every future week when we put another piece of your past on trial. Now let's get some beats.
Myopia Defender Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by the Serenaders, and the music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!